Okay, good morning, everyone. Thank you. I'd like to go ahead and get us started on time. And we've actually designed this section to be sort of a continuous story about our trials and tribulations, if you will, of implementing, of doing some developmental screening in multiple systems. So what I'd like to do this morning to keep things moving and give you the whole story at once is to introduce all the speakers right now, and then we will go directly into each speaker and we'll have the discussion then at the end, okay? So I'd like to introduce our speakers today are going to be Eileen Auer Bennett from Assuring Better Child Health and Development Program, which is the program that brought us all together. And then Dr. Arnie Beck, who is the Director of Quality Improvement at Kaiser Permanente, Colorado, will be talking about the implementation and dissemination concepts to spread our program. And then I'm Alana Kolchak-Rom. I'm with the Kaiser Institute for Health Research, and I'll be presenting the internet-based technology to tailor well child care. And then Stephanie Phibbs will be presenting on the internet divide. She's with Denver Health. And then Ayelet Talmy, the director of Project Climb at the Children's Hospital, will be talking about the closing the loop. And then let's see if I can make this work and go backwards. And also, I do want to put up our disclosure slide here that all of our presenters have no relationships to disclose. And I would like to introduce Eileen Auer Bennett. Thank you.
Morning, everybody. Thanks for being up so early. As Alana said, I coordinate the Assuring Better Child Health and Development Project for Colorado, which is a project to work with primary care providers around early identification of referral with children with potential developmental delays. And I have this slide up because Assuring Better Child Health and Development Project really started as a project about screening, but we soon learned that it was much bigger than that. Presently in Colorado, about 54% of our pediatric practices are screening, but of all the referrals that come to Early Intervention Colorado, only about 37% are coming from primary care providers. So we know we have a very large gap in providers that are referring children either that have been identified or potentially may be identified. And through the ABCD project, we've been able to, in collaboration with Kaiser, Denver Health, and Children's Hospital, look at all the reasons why after screening, children are not either being referred, or if they are being referred, why they're not making it to services. So that's really the premise for this presentation, is how each entity on their own, but also within a collaboration, have been able to come together to look at that screening to referral to eventually services, and most importantly, closing the loop back with the referral source. This slide just speaks to what probably a lot of you already know is happening with where we're under-identifying children. So if you look at the national target, we're looking at potentially identifying 2% of children that can benefit from early intervention services. But the 13 to 15% are what we potentially could be identifying, so we're grossly under-identifying. And then those children that we are identifying, only a very small percentage of those children are actually receiving services. This quote, and I'll just let you take a quick minute to read it. This is what has set the premise for the next round of ABCD. ABCD is a national program. It exists in about 23 states. The Commonwealth has funded many phases of ABCD. ABCD 3 is looking at the lessons learned from ABCD 1 and 2. And those lessons really come back to the challenges that families, providers, and communities have with referring and linking children to community services. So this next round of ABCD 3, of which Colorado is not in that contingency, is figuring out how can we better, you know, provide care coordination, linkages, and case management for young children. So it's exciting for us here is that with our other presenters of Denver Health Kaiser and Children's Hospital, is we have been able to move this work forward in Colorado to figure that out. And the next slides will kind of tell you the steps that have been happening with that.
Sorry, I'll go this way. And so next is Arnie Beck.
Good morning, everybody. Push this up a little bit. Welcome, and thank you for my Kaiser Permanente colleagues for and Institute for Health Research for joining us. This feels like it could be one of those noon seminars with all of you in the audience. So as Alana has said, and Eileen kind of stressed, we're going to do a sequence of presentations to really talk about the multiple efforts we have at our different institutions around improving developmental assessment and screening. I also first want to thank Charlotte Fellers, Bree Griffin, and Marilyn Pearson for their great support of this project, too. They're not speaking today, but they are very, very involved in this. So well-child care visits, and I'm talking now from the Kaiser Permanente perspective of the project that we've been doing, but well-child care visits comprise a lot of care. 25% of all pediatrics and over 50% of all visits in the first year of life. So it's a big business, really, and actually there's some controversy about the efficacy of well-child care, which is for another talk. But only about 20% of children receive structured or validated developmental services or assessments at the well-child visit. And 50% of parents think that their child's developmental and behavioral issues are not adequately addressed. Often these visits, in other words, have sort of a focus on the medical aspect rather than the social and emotional developmental kinds of issues that are probably often of more concern to parents. And this leads to the fact that a substantial percentage of children entering school have a cognitive problem or behavioral or developmental problem that could have benefited from early identification and treatment or intervention. And why is that important? Because the educational gaps that are seen at entrance into kindergarten only widen through the lifespan. And there's some interesting economic analyses done to show that the cost to society actually increase over time. Due to lack of attention to some of these issues that could have been addressed early in the child's life. On the delivery care, delivery side of it, pediatricians want to do a better job as well, and they're frustrated about having a limited amount of time or resources or training to deliver these services. So they also know there's a need for change and a need to do things in a better, more effective, and perhaps more innovative way. So with that as a background, we embarked on a series of projects over the last few years, funded first by Commonwealth Fund and then internal funding from Kaiser, to look at improving the effectiveness and efficiency of delivery of developmental and preventive services, and particularly the feasibility, acceptance, and implementation of a different way, of an innovative way of delivering well-child care. And I'm going to talk a little bit about the sort of conceptual framework around that. But the components of this well-child care included the following. We wanted to make sure that we had personalized care to meet the individual needs of families, so that it was sort of that notion of personalized medicine, but applied not to genomics, to pediatrics instead. Also meet the mandates from American Academy of Pediatrics around developmental and behavioral screening. Get families engaged in the assessment process too, and the possibility of doing that assessment outside the actual visit itself. Use a team-based approach to coordinate care for children with special health care needs because they have a lot of complex problems that require a lot of different providers and specialty services. And then, if possible, increase the value of well-child care by doing these kinds of activities and care coordination without increasing the actual cost, because that would be a non-starter in a system like ours if we had significantly increased cost of doing this innovative service. More specifically, we planned for and pilot tested a variety of different types of visits. We have been using a web-based pre-visit assessment tool. It's called CHADIS, Child Health and Development Interactive System. We've experimented with e-visits, that is, internet or email visits from providers to parents through kp.org. And as many of you know, in Kaiser, that's a growing business as well. We've experimented with brief MD visits and regular visits, which were augmented by the pre-assessment information that was available in summarized form to the pediatrician or the developmental specialist. What's important here is that as we embarked on this process, we recognized that there had to be flexibility. The provider should determine the frequency of visits in consultation with the family. So if it's a first visit with a new parent of a new kid, they might want all the bells and whistles. If it's the third child and doesn't look like there are any particular issues, they might get into, you know, e-visits or brief MD visits. The objectives of our work were to use the concepts of implementation dissemination science, and that's kind of the focus here, is around the question of, can you improve the implementation process of an innovative model of well-child care by using these concepts from the literature. But we also wanted to demonstrate the effectiveness of this model we call 21st century well-child care on the quality without adversely impacting costs, as I said. Meet the developmental and preventive needs of children with special health care needs, and facilitate the spread of this model both within Kaiser and in Denver Health. So the activities that we had to do this included selecting three practice sites within KP Colorado and doing several activities. And the two key activities were doing social network maps. And those of you in the IHR have had some exposure to this, but this is a method of looking at who talks to who for advice around well-child care, and I'll talk a little bit about that more in a minute. We also did focus groups and key stakeholder interviews. The focus groups were done with both pediatricians and the nursing staff, and they were done separately so that people could feel comfortable about sort of what their world of work would look like with implementing this model. And then we went ahead and implemented at these three sites and did some evaluation work. So, you know, being an academic, kind of, I've got to put some sort of conceptual framework on the screen, and it doesn't look like it's very easy to read. But the point of this slide, more than reading all the nitty-gritty details, is to say that there are models out there that actually provide some guidance for how you might implement and disseminate and sustain an intervention or a model. And this was developed by Russ Glasgow and Adrian Feldstein. Adrian is at Center for Health Research in Portland, and Russ, as many of you know, is now at NCI in Washington. But this model takes into account the characteristics of the intervention from the patient and organizational perspective, the recipients of the intervention, the organizational characteristics and patient characteristics, environmental issues like external environment, the implementation and sustainability infrastructure, which is a huge issue, and then goes on to put in components of the REAIM model that some of you are familiar with that include adoption, implementation, and maintenance. I added in the components of focus groups and social networks, which were methods that we were using as sort of ways in which we could gather information that would inform this model. On the social networks, we thought that the understanding opinion leaders and the way the social networks worked at these implementation clinics would help us enhance the spread of the model. We could understand who was the opinion leader, who were the opinion leaders, and we could do some social marketing with them to facilitate the sort of positive attributes of this model of well-child care. The data from these social network maps, which I'm going to show in a minute, were based on the most frequent ties, how often that people communicated with each other in these implementation sites. And it's a different whole presentation to go into the details of social network maps. Suffice it to say, they have different attributes that you can measure, such as betweenness, power, and centrality and reach. And those all speak to certain characteristics of those maps. In order to gather a map, to get the information for a map, we had to hand out questionnaires. Alana did many of this at our implementation sites. And they asked basic questions. Among the people at your clinic, who do you look for new ideas or better ways of doing things concerning pediatric care? And how often do you communicate with these people? And who are these people? We also asked about an internet literate or satisfaction item to see what the providers thought about that. And these kinds of questionnaires can produce a map like this. And this is one of our large implementation clinics. And for readability, fortunately, we circled these nodes in red. These were the opinion leaders. They're not identified, but they included a couple of pediatricians, a developmental specialist, in fact, our only developmental specialist who's sitting right here in the room, and another person off to here. But you can sort of get a visual of the amount of communication to these opinion leaders or nodes in the network, if you will. So we knew that these were key people to be able to loop in on this and to make sure that they had positive feelings about the intervention and wanted to promote it. If they wouldn't be able to do it, then we wouldn't have any chance of doing this kind of work. The focus group results were also very, very informative. They told us the following things. There should be choice in the mode of completing the pre-visit assessment. Well child should be compatible with current appointment scheduling procedures. And this is very important. The whole operational issues of how people are checked in, who's responsible, like the front desk staff or desktop medicine clerks for handing out the information. What do we do about advanced access if we want to do pre-visit assessment 2 weeks before, but parents are getting the visit the next day? There had to be flexibility of choice, both for the clinician, the choice of clinician and visit type. And it should be member-centric. The visit should be tailored to the needs of children and parents. For example, we designed a 40-minute that's twice as long as the usual well-child visit for children with special health care needs, which included partnership with a pediatric chronic care coordinator. And we had to account for clinicians' time constraints, both at the visit and in pre- and post-visit documentation. So anything that sort of pushed out of the normal routine or really boofed up operations was not seen favorably, you can imagine. So the lessons learned to date from doing this at three different clinics were the following. Certain things emerged that we really never anticipated that were problems expressed by the providers. And the first one, first and foremost, that's going to be talked about more today was closing the loop. That is when positive screens come back, for example, on an ages and stages questionnaire or on an MCHAT, an autism screening questionnaire, the kids could be referred for developmental services, but there was no information back to the providers about what happened, whether those services were actually received or not. The internet-based tool Chattis, although it was embraced by many parents and by some of the providers, posed some barriers in terms of licensing fees and trying to develop a business case for doing something that would cost more. Also, our pediatrics department and family medicine departments work hand in hand, and so they wanted to make sure that anything we did in pediatrics as an innovation in well child care would be matched in family medicine. And they have a different perspective on things. They want it a little more summarized, less detailed, and so on, because only 10% of their practice is pediatrics. A big issue that we're working on will probably be over the next 2 years is integrating into our electronic medical record system, Health Connect. And to the extent that you could get automated assessment information ported directly into the electronic medical record, the providers would be a lot happier than they are now. Next was the need for a behavioral health liaison. If issues, psychosocial and behavioral issues are identified, it would be nice to have somebody who provided a consultation liaison services and could identify whether this child should be referred for behavioral health services or some other type of intervention. And fortunately, we have a growing a group of behavioral medicine specialists at Kaiser who can do some of this work. Finally, when you've seen one system, you've seen one system. What works for Kaiser Colorado absolutely wouldn't work for Denver Health. Our populations are different. We have different organizational, not only structures, but climates as well. And you'll hear more about that in the ensuing presentations. Thank you.
Okay, so following that, I'm going to talk about what happened when we did try to both pilot and implement the program at Kaiser Permanente, Colorado. And I do want to acknowledge that throughout the pilot phase and implementation phase, our developmental specialist, Sharla Fellers, has really been instrumental in this. And Bree and Marilyn have been hugely helpful at doing all of this at Kaiser, Colorado. And so what I'm going to present on is basically this whole idea of where we tried to implement this using this internet-based technology to collect those ages and stages questionnaires prior to the visit. And so our goal was first to evaluate the feasibility and acceptance of the model in our organization in Kaiser, Colorado, and to have the family fill this out beforehand on the computer and then see if that was the visit could then be tailored to their needs, as Arnie talked about, the brief visit, the e-visit, and all of that. And we also wanted to test this longer visit with the developmentals, the pediatric care coordinators for the children with special health care needs. And that was a pre-visit assessment actually done by the pediatric chronic care coordinators and then done in conjunction with the primary care pediatrician. So we did this all at Kaiser Permanente, Colorado, for all these results that I'm presenting. Our first pilot phase, we tested each visit type with one doctor. From each doctor was actually also from a different clinic for each of these. And we used sort of a rapid cycle, plan, do, study, act. That's what the PDSA is, cycle. And then along with our specific aims and outcomes, we wanted to measure satisfaction from parents and providers and also develop process flows that we would then use for the implementation clinics. So the separate visits that we tested again were the e-visit, and we tested that at 9 months because Kaiser, Colorado doesn't actually have a 9-month well-child visit. So we had the parents fill out the questionnaire online, and then the providers then did an electronic visit via email with the parents for that to take the place of that visit. We also tested the brief visit model with another provider in another clinic where the parents, again, who were maybe experienced parents, second child or third or fourth child, where they would fill out again the developmental questionnaire online and then maybe come in for just their shots or just a brief hello with the provider to maintain rapport. And then we also did this with the regular 20-minute well-child visit where, the parents were to fill it out ahead of time online and then come in and have the doctor talk to them within the well-child visit about that developmental screening, but it still took a regular appointment time. And then we also tested this extra-long appointment with the children with special health care needs with the pediatric chronic care coordinator doing the pre-visit assessment with the parents ahead of time and then checking in with the parents at the visit or shortly thereafter. And so when we looked at this pilot phase, we did parent and provider surveys right after the visits to see what they thought of the process and how it went and if they thought it was feasible. And we also collected visit information on the visit times and if it seemed to be causing any problems as well, and just to make sure that the providers had time to review these developmental assessments online and that, because of course if they don't have the time, it's not gonna get done and the whole thing's gonna fall apart. And so we also wanted to compare that and make sure that it didn't really cause any extra burden compared to regular well-child care as we currently had at Kaiser. So basically everybody was satisfied. You can tell by the bar graph, they're all pretty high. Really, they found it helpful. They liked using the online questionnaire. They found it very interesting, very easy. Some parents for the e-visit liked not having to bring their kids into the clinic where they might get sick when they bring them in. So there were a lot of things that both the providers and the parents were satisfied about. They thought it was very helpful in identifying those topics that they were concerned about in their child's development. And they even felt it was much more efficient than a regular well-child visit. And for the children with special health care needs, again, overall, 80% or better, very satisfied with it, both in terms of the connection with the pediatric chronic care coordinator, identifying those problems that still needed to be worked on, efficiency, and just overall care coordination. Both parents and providers were extremely satisfied with it. So we decided that, yes, this is feasible. We can move forward and actually try to implement this in a number of clinics. So we wanted to do this in four Kaiser clinics, two pediatric, one primary care clinic, which is both pediatricians and family practice providers in the same clinic, and one family medicine clinic. And we also then, this is where we started the collaboration with the Safety Net Clinic Denver Health to see if they could also take this online assessment and work that into their collection of the ages and stages questionnaires, the developmental screening, and see if that would also work in the Safety Net environment. So what we found in our different implementation clinics, the first two are the two pediatric clinics, the blue line and the big pink line. They had a pretty high rate of getting a lot of people on first, and then they just kind of plateaued out. And so this is just the number of registrations on the online, to use the online developmental screening tool ahead of time. The green line being the newest clinic, which obviously did much better. they seem to have integrated it into their systems a lot better, at least for getting parents registered on the online tool to be able to use it to collect those developmental screens ahead of time. And the bottom line there is the family medicine clinic. So, but again, as Arnie said, they're only about 10% of their population is pediatrics, so it's a little bit misleading. And I just wanted to give a little more detail about the time that it took for the newest clinic, the green line there, clinic number four. Again, they just implemented this. They took to the technology, I think, a lot better than the other clinics, and just got their parents all registered to do this developmental screening ahead of time. But as we looked at the satisfaction data, most parents are saying it takes less than 20 minutes to do this online. We looked at whether they liked the internet-based questionnaire better than a paper questionnaire, whether they prefer to do it at home, and at all of the clinics, we have high satisfaction with them preferring to do it at home. They liked the internet-based questionnaire better than the paper questionnaire at all of the clinics. So again, you can kind of see this really high satisfaction level there. One of the clinics, it seems to take them a little bit longer than the 20 minutes to do it. But some of the comments that parents gave about doing the online questionnaire rather than in the clinic is that they like being able to actually go through it with their child and actually try these tasks instead of sitting in a busy waiting room where, you know, they're like, I don't know if my kid can do this or not. Here, hold this pencil and see, you know, see if you can write this, and you're trying to do this amidst screaming kids. So they really like doing it at home. So, but we've learned a lot of other things too, and our providers have also been very satisfied with the internet-based tool, but we've also learned some interesting things as well, in that the 40-minute visit, the one with the chronic care coordinators, those actually got implemented pretty much as standard care by the pediatric chronic care coordinators themselves. They took it on, they owned it, they ran with it, modified it slightly. It doesn't look today like it did when we originally piloted it, but they still do those pre-visit questionnaires or pre-visit assessments over the phone with the families, both the providers and the parents, and the pediatric chronic care coordinators seem to be very satisfied with that, and the pediatric chronic care coordinators actually set up that 40-minute appointment to make sure that that happens. Rather than doing these different visit types like we expected, where they could get the online questionnaire and determine whether the patient or the parent needed a brief visit, an e-visit, or a regular well-child visit, all of the clinics basically implemented using the online tool with the regular well-child visit. They didn't use it to determine what kind of visit type the parents got. They just used it with the regular well-child visit. So again, what Arnie said, it had to fit into the normal system flow. But what they did do is they started playing with the e-visits and the brief visits for other purposes. So using the online tool for ADHD follow-up evaluations and doing those via e-visits. So they've tried to think about other ways that they could make well child care, again, more efficient, but just not in the way that we had originally expected it to be done. We also discovered that the internet-based pre-visit assessment tool was a bit too complex for our system. We only use about 10% of its capacity of what it does, or 10% of the capability, but it still does work very well and everybody likes it. So some sort of online tool is acceptable. We've also learned that some other unintended consequences. As Arnie alluded to, our electronic data was not retrievable or necessarily accurate, or it was completely incompatible with our workflows. And so we had to develop new workflows to incorporate the online tool and actually be able to track the screening of children. We also discovered, as you'll hear more, that flawed follow-up feedback process where we discovered we needed to look further at closing the loop. And also, we discovered that the internet-based pre-visit questionnaire, while it worked well at Kaiser Colorado, did not work very well at Denver Health. And so that is what Stephanie is going to come and talk about next.
All right, well, we were really excited. Denver Health was really excited to partner with Kaiser, and it was really exciting to think about this 21st century well child care model and how we could really deliver efficient care to children. We had an inkling that this might be a little bit more complicated in our population due to the research related to the internet divide. And that's what I'll tell you some more details about. So just want to acknowledge Simon Hambidge. He's the head of general peds at Denver Health, and he's the principal investigator on this. And then additionally, Sylvia Gutierrez-Raganat and Bree, as she's been pointed out, and Arnie and David are also part of this research. So, you know, as you've heard, internet-based technology can be used and used satisfactorily by a lot of parents. And as we've talked about, there is a digital divide that Spanish and English-speaking populations are known to use the internet at different rates. And so it was really unknown. We kind of had a thought that it wouldn't work at Denver Health, but we thought, well, let's try it. It's been several years since I've seen some research around the Denver Health population, so let's see really what their capacity for using the internet is. And so that's where we went. So as Arnie talked about, well child care is really central to the whole pediatric practice, but there's really a challenge to fit in all of the developmental assessments and all of the different things that could be done in pediatric well child care into what's known as the 17-minute visit, basically. And so, you know, being able to do the internet-based developmental assessment would obviously add efficiencies for the whole well child care system. And then again, our question was, you know, within a really low-income population, so 98% is below 200% of the federal poverty level, is there a digital divide between our Spanish and English speakers? Because it's clear that between different income levels, there's a digital divide. But further, in a low-income population, would there be also a digital divide, a further digital divide between the English and Spanish speakers? And then, if there were or not, would we be able to implement this internet-based pre-visit developmental screening assessment? So the setting that we are in is Denver Health, and Denver Health provides care to over 35% of Denver's pediatric population. 85% of those people and those families are 100% below federal poverty level, 98% below 200%. Federal poverty level. And 40% of our families identify Spanish as their primary language. So we had we did a variety of methods, you know, similar to how Alana talked about different things that they did at Kaiser. We did various methods, and the first was we did some surveys of parents, so consecutive surveys of parents in four different clinics within 1 month. And that was to just using like the Pew Foundation's internet survey questions. We asked questions about internet use, so just to get a baseline understanding of whether they're using the internet. Then we also conducted focus groups, and so we asked about, you know, your use of computers, and if there was a computer in the lobby of the clinic, would you be able to use that? Then then we went further and we did a couple home visits just to do some more in-depth look at what internet use really looks like. And then we did a pilot test of this online administration in the clinics. So here's what we found in our internet survey. Excuse me. So there's clearly an internet, there's a digital divide between the Spanish and English speakers. So whereas something like 40% of Spanish speakers use a computer, nearly 80% of English speakers. And same like going online from home, anyone in the household goes online. So those are all significant. The final question we asked, or one of the final questions was, with help, would you actually use a computer in the clinic? And so we saw, okay, there's this internet divide, this digital divide, but 80% of our population is saying that they would be willing to use, you know, a computer in the clinic to do their online assessment. So we thought, okay, well, actually, maybe there's some promise here. You know, maybe there's some hope for being able to kind of follow in the same way as Kaiser has gone. So then we did 7 focus groups. There were 3 in English with 15 participants, 4 in Spanish with 27 participants. Everyone said, oh yeah, pre-visit work, that's really great. We love doing the assessments. It helps us prepare for the visit with our provider. And there was some interest in this online pre-visit assessment. Every one of the groups said, yeah, but we do think that a paper option is really important. Some of the barriers people identified were, my computer breaks down and I can't fix it. People said that they don't have printers at all. And a lot of people noted that there's lack of internet access and just plain use of computers. And then the online assessment completion was in the waiting room was considered better. But as one person said, children and computers don't mix well. So they talked a lot. There were different people that said, you know, I'm running around after my child and, you know, I can't leave the assessment here, or the children have, you know, food and drink and that's going to be around the computers. So people were concerned about those kinds of things. But we thought, okay, there's still some hope. So then we did... And this was Sylvia. She did 5 home visits interviewing Spanish-speaking mothers. And these were supposed to be families who all had computers. So 3 of the families actually had a computer at home. One family had internet access, and that was via some unprotected wireless network. And then all mothers, they again, you know, like in our focus groups, we heard they'd love to use this computer to communicate with providers. However, first they'd have to learn how to use a computer, and then next, one person at least said, I really don't have time to learn how to use that. So hope was diminishing at this point. And so then we said, okay, well, let's really go for it. And we tested this online administration with 17 families. So we took a laptop computer and had wireless connections inside the waiting room. We were able to have 14 people complete the assessment, but we don't think that all of them received a printout in the clinic. And barriers we identified there was logging into the system required an email address, and very few of our parents had that email address, and so the system was set up that it made it much more difficult. And so by the time, a lot of times that the email address was obtained, then, you know, they were getting ready to be called back. And so then Bree and Sylvia were following parents around the clinics, you know, saying, hold on, you know, here, answer this question. So, and part of the delay also was in needing to teach these parents how to use computers. And then we, of course, had wireless network complications within our system. So all of these things just helped us see that this was going to not be the best way to move forward with Denver Health. So in conclusion, we, you know, affirm that this internet divide does exist between English and Spanish-speaking populations within this low-income population. These online pre-visit assessments are possible, but it would require overcoming a number of barriers. So we did decide on using a paper pencil administration method, and we just received survey results back And we found out, we asked the question directly, you know, would you like to take this survey on, you know, using paper and pencil or online at home or online, you know, beforehand? And basically it was something like 12% said that they would prefer doing it on the computer, and I think 8% of that was in the clinic. So we kind of felt like it was all clear after all of this work, and everything was kind of confirming, one method confirmed another. And so once we finalized how we're going to deliver all these assessments, and we said, okay, paper and pencil's the way, then we turned our attention to closing the loop. And that's what Ayelet's going to talk to us next.
Come on up, Ayelet.
Good morning, everyone. I first of all want to thank my colleagues at Denver Health and Kaiser and at the Children's Hospital, because the work that we've all been talking about this morning is not work that happens by one person in one place. And you know, you sort of imagine research and QI stuff coming out of somebody sitting at their desk. And this has by far been the most dynamic and collaborative process. And I don't think that we would be here talking about the things that we were talking about if each of the entities was doing the work alone. And so I'm really, really grateful to have an opportunity to be and work in a state where this type of collaboration really moves us forward in our thinking and in how we do our work. We've heard a lot this morning about efforts to improve well-child care, and that is a critical area for us to all be focusing on, because so many young children and their families contact the system, whatever that system may be, through pediatric primary care as primarily a port of entry. So it's a real opportunity for us to think about how to improve quality of care and ultimately improve the health and development of young children. And as I mentioned, it's been a collaborative effort from the start. I'm deeply grateful to the Assuring Better Child Health and Development Project, and also to all of the funders in Colorado that have made this work possible. We have this chance to think about developmental screening from a statewide perspective through ABCD's work. And because so many of us are now doing developmental screening, we also had this opportunity to think about how it was being done across these different systems. And I just want to point out that the three systems, Denver Health, Kaiser, and the Children's Hospital, take care of about 45,000 children ages birth to three in the Metro Denver area a year. That's a lot of children, so we've really had an opportunity to look at transforming care for a large group of kids. The other good thing is that we are all using the same measure, so that we could do some comparison, really apples to apples, in terms of how we're screening for development. Having said that, we have lots of differences in our systems. And so we've also had to think very carefully about what is the same and what is different. And assuming that using the same screening measure means we're all the same was not an assumption that we were willing to make. I don't know how many of you are familiar with the developmental screening process, but this is actually a flow diagram that you do not need to read the details of at all, but is available on the Colorado Early Intervention website. It was developed by a number of state stakeholders to help primary care providers and other people doing screening think about the steps in the process. So what I want you to focus on are the colors. The blue color is the screening and identification and referral process that happens somewhere external to the early intervention system. The yellow is the early intervention system and all that mysterious stuff that happens once you refer a child. And then what you see on the left side is the green box. And the green box is a combination of blue and yellow, which means that both systems are responsible for knowing what's going on there. And that's really knowing the referral outcome. So to break it down very simply, screening happens. We're talking about screening that happens in pediatric primary care. There's been a lot of movement to have screening in other places, including early care and education settings. I'm going to be talking about it from a primary care perspective, but just know that that can be another setting. Then there's the identification. So what do you do once you have a child who's screened in the delayed range on one of the domains? Then there's the referral process. And what we've found when we first started doing this work was that this is where we stopped. And what you could see is that that's about a third of the diagram, and that's really not enough. So our collaboration really said, okay, wonderful, we're all doing a great job screening, and I will show you, we really are doing a great job screening. What next? And what's next is this closing the loop. What happens in this green box? How does the referring provider know what's happened as a result of that referral? What's the communication among these systems? And that's really the critical point of this. We can do a great job screening. If nobody knows the screening outcomes, in the systems nobody knows, because families often do know and hold very important information. But if the systems aren't communicating and we don't know, then it's not a very successful referral process. We're calling this work closing the loop, because really at baseline, all we knew was how many children we screened. Some of us knew how many children actually fell in the abnormal range, how many referrals were made to early intervention, and then how many were receiving services, not so much. And in contrast to many other results and tests in primary care, where if you send a child out for a lab and that lab comes back abnormal, that referring provider knows that lab result, or the clinics have some kind of a system where that result is known and communicated and where that result drives care. What we found when we started looking at this was that the results of screening were not at all driving care or changing what was happening for children. And so what we really wanted to look at was what happened after the providers made the referral. So it goes into that yellow land. But then what? And what information comes back to pediatric primary care providers? And each of our systems is complicated for its own reasons in terms of communication, with some of us having better ability to communicate back the results. This was really an opportunity for quality improvement efforts and for looking at, it's not just about the numbers of kids screened, because if I told you, and I will tell you, the numbers screened, you would all be dazzled and amazed at our capacity to screen young children. And that's lovely, but it's completely insufficient. And so how do we track and improve the referral outcomes and really do this closing the loop in a mindful way that reflects changes in care and quality of care? When we started, all we had was the clinical information that lived in our medical records. Some medical records are electronic, some are paper. All we had was what the provider was documenting. And that included, did you do a screen? Did you identify a delay? So was the provider documenting the results of the screen? And did you make a referral? The question marks after that was the we really don't know. There was no information about the yellow. Really, and rarely was there information about the yellow in any of our charts, unless one of us working on the project was actually putting it into the chart, which is not feasible when you're talking about 45,000 children a year and eight of us doing the work. That just doesn't quite work. Not to mention the fact that we don't all have access to those medical records. And so I'm going to show you now our baseline counting numbers. One of the things that we could tell you before we started the Closing the Loop project was how many screenings we were doing. And so what you see here is the Denver Health data that shows you when, in 2007, when Denver Health started, Ages and Stages wasn't being used. And you can see that where we are today is at an 86% screening rate, which is fairly consistent across our sites and shows that we are doing, again, that excellent job screening. Other baseline data. So we were able to look at the number of screenings completed, and you see that it's between 75 and 92% for each of the sites. At the Children's Hospital, we were also able to track the percent abnormal, and what you can see here is that we're at about 17%. The national average is somewhere between 14 and 16 for abnormal screening using the Ages and Stages. And keep in mind what Eileen said, which is that only 2% of young children receive services, and yet we have this screening rate of 16 to 17%. We were also able to tell the total number of children, so of the children that were screened abnormal, we were also able to tell the total that were referred, and of those it was 72% are being referred by the provider, and then the total not referred is obviously the inverse of that. One of the things that we discovered when we started looking at our data was that while we had 72% of the children who scored in the abnormal range being referred, we had information back from the yellow part of the process in only 14% of the cases. In Colorado, the early intervention system communicates with the referring providers through what's called a referral status update form. But because of a number of systems barriers that this work really beautifully illustrated, we, in the primary care setting, were not getting the referral status update forms, so had no idea what was happening in that yellow part of the process or whether the children that we were referring were eligible for services. Our methods for closing the loop have been primarily manual chart review. So while we are able to pull, I think in all of our sites, we can sort of pull and identify the pool of relevant charts to review, that is children who've screened in the abnormal range, it requires hours and hours and hours of reading those records to figure out what happened with developmental screening. And it's hundreds, I'm saying bordering on thousands of hours. And at this point, we've been able to develop more sophisticated tracking mechanisms, and at Denver Health in particular, an electronic referral system that has resulted from the fact that we've been having to do this manual record review and long-term follow-up, and knowing that that's not an efficient, we're talking about efficiencies in well child care, no provider in their right mind is going to spend these hours because they simply don't have them. They need to be seeing children and knowing the results of the tests that they've sent out for or the referrals that they've made. And the other piece that systemically has happened has been this early intervention care coordination query that the ABCD project has been working very closely with our state early intervention system on to develop a way to give the sites information on the referrals and the eligibility status for the people that they've referred. So that's been really helpful and a nice development. Just to speak very quickly to the complexity and to the differences among our systems, what you see here is the Denver Health flow for developmental screening, and at each box there are opportunities for us to collect information about closing the loop. This flow is Kaiser's flow. It looks different than Denver Health's, and this is what we've had to do in this work. While we are using the same measure, we have very different processes. One of the things that I want to point out about Kaiser's and that we'll come back to when we look at reasons for non-referral is this idea of a watchful wait. So in Kaiser, that's been a purposeful, the child is scoring in the abnormal range, we're not going to refer yet, but there's a mechanism for bringing the child back in and seeing if a referral really does need to be made. What we found is that when we looked at, and this is children's, it's really hard to see, but there are words in each of those boxes. This is our flow at children's. What we found was that our providers weren't referring and were documenting, let's wait and see what happens next visit. I'm not sure that that's a watchful wait. That's a deferring referral. And so there is an opportunity there to train providers in thinking about how you make that, I'm not going to refer right now, into a real watchful wait, which requires a reevaluation within a specified amount of time, not just at the next well child check. So what we've been able to look at are the types of referrals that are made by primary care providers, the rates, the frequency of successful referral completion, and then the reasons why providers aren't referring. What you see here are the types of referrals, and this is just in our birth to three populations. This happens to be Children's Hospital data, and I'll be showing you data from different sites. What you see is that the most common referral in the birth to three range in the face of an abnormal screen is to early intervention, which is very appropriate, and that's what we would expect to see. What you also see here is this watchful wait, I don't know, follow-up at next visit is what we were calling it at Children's. We'd like for it to be a watchful wait if it's the case that the ASQ is abnormal. What you see here is another thing that we've been able to track, again, through this extensive medical record abstraction. The red line is the referral rate. So that's that average of 72% referrals. The greenish line is the referral completion rate, meaning that when our providers are referring, there's a big gap and that the referrals are not getting completed. That's a whole different talk that's required a lot of other work, but we can certainly talk a little bit about that if people have specific questions about why there's this gap. But the reality is that our providers can come back and say to us, we're doing what you said, we're making referrals, and nothing's happening. Families and children are not experiencing anything different as a result of these referrals, which means as a result of the screening. And that is not where we want to be. We can also look at reasons for non-referrals, referral outcomes, so this is really the gold. Why, were the children eligible for services and what types of services are they receiving? And then what's the provider knowledge about referral outcomes? And so what we see when we do this very extensive, labor-intensive chart review is that sometimes in 18% of the cases of the records we reviewed, the patient was already receiving services. So that's good news. They had an abnormal result on a developmental screening, but they're already getting speech and language services or physical therapy or whatever it is. Again, we have this 30% say, I didn't refer because they're going to come back and I'll see them. And then in 16% of the charts that we reviewed, the developmental screener wasn't even abnormal. And so this was a charting error because the charts here were picked up through an electronic informatics data pull, and this was a provider charting error. This is our actual closing the loop data. So what do we know about the outcomes and by each of the three sites? So between 27 and 46% of the time, we, doing this manual record review, were able to tell what happened and whether the child was eligible or not eligible for services, what services they were receiving. In between 12 and almost 40% of the cases, there were a whole host of reasons, including things like parents refused the evaluation service or we weren't able to, or the early intervention program wasn't able to contact the families, where there was no outcome even in the face of an abnormal screen. And then in 20 to 56% of the cases, we couldn't tell. So the middle set of bars is we knew why the referral, there was no services and the referral wasn't completed, but between 20 and 56% of the time in each of these sites, we don't know what happened. There was no communication. So obviously lots of opportunity for thinking about how to improve our system. Our lessons learned, you obviously can't stop at referral. And I think in Colorado, we are doing a remarkable job of screening and identification and referral, and that's still not enough. We can't assume that even when we've done all of the work that we're supposed to do, that providers know what the outcome of referrals is, or that families have told them. And so we have to change the culture of developmental screening, identification, and referral so that the loop is closed and that there are safety checks along the way with each of the players that can possibly hold the information. And it's a lot of players. It takes a long time and a lot of work to get the information that we were able to get, and you can still see that we're missing a lot of information. We can think about and have implemented at each of the sites quality improvement efforts at each point in the process. And if you go back to those flow diagrams and to how different they are across the sites and all of the opportunities for improving the quality of care, that's a lot of opportunities. It's taken partnership and communication among our sites, but also for us in primary care to be working with the other systems players has been a huge and important part of the work and has been largely spearheaded by ABCD. We have been able to implement systems level efforts, including things like changing the consent, the release for information on the referral status update form so that now there's not a barrier of the parent having to consent because the parent consents automatically at referral that the information and the outcomes of the evaluation get
turned back to the referring provider, which is a huge obstacle. If you have to go back and get parent consent and then figure out who to send it to, that's why we only had 14% of those documents on file. And there's a lot more work to be done. And I think I just want to end with saying that the collaboration and the systems pieces, it's great that we know within our systems now, but what do we do with this information? It has tremendous policy implications and opportunities for really changing the way we do the business of developmental screening, identification, and referral, which will ultimately impact the quality of care that we can provide in primary care. Thank you.
Okay, so we have some time for questions and discussion. If you would like to, actually Stephanie and Islet, if you can, guys can come up to, if you would like to ask individual questions of each speaker's presentation or the whole story.
I'm curious about the use of the waiting room survey of the patients at Denver Health. Did you change the tool at all? Access those patients in the waiting room from one that they're sort of clicking on, you know, in a web page. The Kaiser patients from home are clicking on this thing on the web page. But the waiting room, was it adapted to more of a kind of a kiosk type, big buttons, screen, something like that?
I'm going to let Stephanie answer that one.
We didn't go that far down the developmental path. We were working with this one internet company, and so we tried to, you know, use that in the waiting room. And if we had had maybe developmental funds that would make it really easy, touch screen everything without having to log on to the internet, et cetera, probably would have gone a lot farther. But yeah.
Can you hear me? If I add something, there's a lot of work going on now, pilot testing a variety of sort of data collection devices, including touchscreen tablets and even ones that actually provide sound, you know, of the questions for parents who might have literacy issues. So a lot going on there. We just haven't implemented it yet.
We only tested one specific question up front.
So I'm here this morning to learn from you, and I've learned an awful lot. And congratulations on all the work. I'm from Massachusetts, and I'm in the coordinating of the collaboration phase of doing very similar work around vision screening for children. So this has been very helpful. And my question to you is that obviously the constraints and the opportunities are similar, but it's making great sense to me that we have to put the child back together into one piece. And so for the traditional activities and the well care visits, such as beam screening, how do you link or not link or develop efficiencies around incorporating the developmental understanding that sometimes there are the more basic developmental, such as the old-fashioned vision and hearing? How do you make those connections so that we aren't creating different systems and instead linking and integrating? Have you thought or come across those sorts of questions in all of your work?
I'll talk about it from the perspective of Denver Health, because we've had a lot of success actually recently, because we were able to redesign some electronic systems, as Ayala alluded to, that we have an electronic referral system now. And so that referral system allows referrals to go out and come back through a central point and be updated in an electronic registry. And so then the information back from the early intervention sites is then put into the medical record. And then we have a central repository where we can go back to the early intervention sites and say, look, these are the kids we haven't heard anything about. So that helps us get some of the information back. And what we're doing now is at the point of care, we're able to produce what's a care summary, which includes notice to the provider that if there's a delay after the screening with early intervention, if there's a delay, then that is to come up on this care summary. So it informs the provider, yes, along with, you know, everything else in their chart, that you have referred to early intervention and the outcome has been that the child is delayed. So that's as far as we've gotten, but we feel like that's pretty far along the way, but there may be more that's happened the other side.
I think the question of bringing back the whole child is a really important one, because lots of different eyes are often on children, and how it's that communication piece of how do you know the results of things and how do you talk about it. And so, as an example, in Colorado, there's now an effort for health integration, and I sort of think about it, I don't know if anyone talks about it like this, but as every door is the right door for screening, and that you may be at your pediatric office, but you may be getting an oral health screening. And I happen to work in a setting and coordinate a program that provides mental health and behavioral supportive services. And we're very interested in communicating the information that we have from screening or not screening, but just from being with the family back to the primary care provider to think about, you know, what's going on for this child and why may we be seeing certain delays in the face of family circumstance. And so we do think a lot about that communication among the systems players, making sure that if there are screening results available somewhere, that they live with the child. And from a provider perspective, it really is knowing the questions to ask and then documentation. So we have changed the templates that our providers use so that they include the screening. And when somebody is reviewing a note, they actually see all of the screening that was done as one thing, and it lives in one place. I think the electronic referral is another way of doing that. But then for us, it's also been a lot of provider education of how do you integrate the information? How do you document the information in a way that the next provider, because I work in a residency training clinic, and the next provider may not be the provider that the family saw right before, that the next provider really understands this child. So it's figuring out within the systems how that communication can happen so that it goes with the child, and that providers know to ask, even if they're screening for mental health, about oral health and about physical health, and that our provider population is really thinking comprehensively and has the tools to screen.
And I'd like to follow on that too on a more of a technical note that you've heard both from Ayala and Stephanie. You know, you've probably heard, we have, in a lot of these systems, we've developed electronic processes, or we started with electronic medical records. It doesn't mean we actually know what's going on. So part of this, what Ayala was talking about with changing the template, some of that is you have to look at your electronic systems. Even if you get these communication things in place, do you have the ability to get that information back out? We've talked, and Ayala especially hit on the fact that this is lots of manual hours of chart review that has taken us to figure out this data in our systems, and we have electronic medical records. If you looked at the Kaiser workflow, we have an issue in the middle of there. There's a few of those places that have a big problem that it says, this goes to Sharla, which is our one developmental specialist. And even in Denver Health, they've put individuals that are like chronic care coordinators or other care coordinators in the middle, because there needs to be almost a person who is pulling all that data from all of these different places and making sure that it's there properly, because the electronic systems maybe cannot handle that, or they're not set up to pull the data properly, or it didn't get set up in your processes the way your electronic medical record was set up. It may not be set such that you can even pull the data out. The example being our ASQ data at Kaiser is entered in a text field, and so we can't pull abnormals out of that without manually reviewing every single one, or our process being that the provider now has to remember to CC Sharla on the chart. So you really need to think about your workflows and your efficiencies sort of from a data perspective as well, what you want to get out, and are you going to be able to even look at those outcomes?
And I would say across systems.
Uh-huh,
so definitely. The biggest challenge for us before we started doing this work, we have a sophisticated electronic medical record system. We can pull the data, we can show you all the data that you want. We had no idea what was happening in the early intervention system. So if you're at the point of setting up that system, thinking about, do you need a bi-directional release now ahead of time so that you don't end up with 14% of the charts where you have this referral status update form, and requiring 3 phone calls to get that 14%. It wasn't that the referral status update forms came to us. We had to ask for them and could only get them in 14% of the cases. So in advance, working with the systems players who are going to hold the information to have a streamlined way of getting the information to the family and to the providers that work with the family.
But to remember that systems isn't just primary care. So in Colorado, right, we're doing a lot of screening in our ECE. So how do you coordinate screening across communities? So now, you know, closing the loop, it's identifying where all those closing the loop opportunities. How do you close the loop between early care and education and primary care? How do you, you know, Head Start or, you know, community health screening? So it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And you know, ABCD, we go, okay, we're in our, you know, we just got refunded for 3 years, and I'm already going, and then, you know. So it's systems, but think big. I mean, we're thinking as big as how can we use our immunization registry for some of this tracking. Mm-hmm. So
it's very affirming to me. I switch from overwhelming to opportunity.
Yeah. Yes.
I do that, you know, with multiple times in an hour every day.
Thank you very much.
And though I would like to add one other thing there too, I just thought I will be another collaborator of ours, David Bergman, who would, the one thing we haven't mentioned is to also include as stakeholders the families as well.
Yes.
In that process and what might work for them.
Yeah, and I'll just tag on to that. That in Denver Health, you see that the number of families who've refused services is far above what happens at Children's Hospital or Kaiser. And we really feel like that's an issue of parent-provider communication. And so we also had to go in and create new referral information forms for parents so that all the providers are giving out the same information and that parents are being told, yes, if you don't hear from someone within 2 weeks, that's not right. You need to get back in communication with us. And so there's this kind of partnership between the parents and the providers that we found we also have to address. So we hope that'll have some impact.
That's our opportunity this hour.
Yes. Other questions, comments? Thanks for discussion.
The ages and stages questionnaire is a very age. About a certain age group, and it's the age group that comes in most often to the group, but there's also a length to it. If you thought about using this approach with any other age groups or screenings where the problem might be different, you know, you're talking about 12-year-olds, you don't have to worry about them screaming and spilling their brains on.
Yeah. Arnie, why don't you start with that?
Ages and stages is kind of the baseline fundamental assessment, but we're working with MCHATs for autism screening, pediatric symptom checklists, teen depression screening, just starting to do that with a modified version of the PHQ-9, and using a Vanderbilt for ADHD assessment. So there's kind of no end to what can be done, although ASQ is being driven by mandates from like American Academy of Pediatrics, so it's sort of the baseline thing. Our hope would be over time to incrementally add on other types of assessments. But if you do add on other assessments, you start to need, for example, as Ayelet said, the behavioral health integration piece. You don't want to screen for something that you're not prepared to work with once you find abnormal results. It sounds obvious, but sometimes we do that in our systems, and we don't figure out the way to do referral and get kids to adequate services.
And I would add to that, so something that we've been doing simultaneous to ages and stages is postpartum depression screening.
Yeah.
And again, as Arnie says, we did it because we have an integrated mental health and behavioral services team that's on site. There are practices throughout Colorado that are screening for postpartum depression. It's an excellent place to screen, given where families with young babies come. They're not, many women, unfortunately, are not getting the proper follow-up in the obstetric or midwifery because they're not going to their 6-week appointments. And even if they are, that 6 weeks of visits where they could have been to the pediatric or family medicine practice several times and without anybody asking. So we're already doing that and tracking it. I think for childhood measures, this is a very relevant methodology to use to think about what do you build into routine well child care and how do you ask about mental health issues or other things. The other piece that I think we are on the cusp of trying to figure out how to do is we've developed a social determinants of health, kind of a measure, like a family screener. That's 9 questions. There are lots of versions of this in pediatrics, but this one draws from the We Care instrument and also from some of the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and asks some questions about family risk factors, including maternal mental health, but not just, so things like family violence, resource needs, whether the primary caregiver has a place to get their health care needs met, which is a really important thing, and whether they feel supported. That kind of examination and that kind of screening is really relevant to the work that we do and to being able to use well child care effectively to support and promote child well-being, because if families aren't well, then children aren't well. And it's a tricky balance of asking really hard questions. If you're going to ask about family violence, what are you going to do when somebody says yes? If you're going to ask about parental substance use, what are you going to do when somebody says yes? You know, somehow we can ask about smoking in pediatric primary care, but if you talk about other drugs or substances, we really don't want to ask unless we know what to do. But I think that that's a whole other domain that is really critical and as critical to the child's development as knowing whether or not they're delayed in one of these 5 domains.
Some of the...
And how do you do it in 17 minutes?
Yeah. I think that's an important point because, and that was brought up in the earlier question, we have to think outside the box of a standard visit. And a lot of what we're talking about today is sort of working around that issue. Do you use developmental specialists, for example, to do a lot of the psychosocial developmental assessment? Do you do it outside of a visit structure? We're sort of using an outdated way of delivering care to do the things we think we need to do. And so it is an issue.
Yeah, and your point is very relevant, and that's kind of what we set out to do with these different visit types, is we set out to try to figure out a way to do this outside of the traditional visit, to do these screenings at another time where you can do more. And as you saw, it ended up getting integrated back into that 17-minute visit. So there's still lots of room for improvement, lots of opportunities to think about different ways to do this, but you're absolutely right. Did that answer your question, or do you have other?
Yeah, I have to go on.
Okay. other issues for the panel?
Well, I think another thing to bring up, because we are here at a public health meeting, is there are public health nurses out there also doing ASQs, and we very much make the point of letting the primary care providers know what the results are. But we're also educating families that this is something that they can ask their primary care provider.
Excellent.
That they should be doing.
And along those lines, one of the things that was so shocking to me when we first started doing ASQs, and we started it where our mental health integrated team was the one that was doing the screening, because our providers were so overwhelmed by the idea of screening that we said, okay, we'll just do it. And then we handed it to them, and now they do it. But one of the things that was really surprising was when we started handing out the forms and talking about the results with families, family after family said to us, I didn't know that I was allowed to talk to my doctor about this. This was how my child is growing, how my child is communicating, how my child is moving. And it's not because we don't have very wonderful primary care providers, but because of the structure of the visit, there wasn't a focus so much on development. It was, is the child walking, is the child talking, crawling, and then we're done because we have so many other things to talk about. So the screening really became an opportunity to refocus on, yes, you can talk to your doctor about this, and yes, you can talk to your early care and education provider about this, or to your mother-in-law who's taking care of the baby, or whatever it is. And so it's not just that you screen, it's how you use the screening and that quality piece that gives us an opportunity to really think about transforming care.
Yeah, that goes back to the statistic I presented about 50% of parents feel like they're
kids' developmental and behavioral issues aren't addressed. And we have this kind of disconnect between what goes on in the well-child visit and what parents think should go on, and what we could provide that we don't. And it's all around the developmental behavioral kinds of stuff.
And I'd like to, from the Denver Health perspective, with the population that is a large immigrant population, there's also a cultural piece of deferring to providers, and just, you know, nodding and just kind of saying, okay. And because the provider is so respected in Latin America. And so I think that really what we're doing is we're empowering, I mean, in terms of the social justice piece in a sense, it's like really helping parents advocate for themselves and to be real engaged partners in their visit, that their voice can be heard with their providers, that they need not, you know, sit by and just wait for the provider to ask them questions, but they also are empowered to be part of a partnership, really, to care for their child.
I think there's some interesting things that also came out of the Denver Health work, and I was thinking about this, Stephanie, that you had mentioned, but there's real opportunities for educating providers about better communication with patients, too. For example, one of the parent refusal reasons we think is around stigma, because they don't understand. They think that if the child's referred, then the child's sort of damaged, or they don't want to accept that. And those are the kinds of cultural things that we were identifying that could speak to improving how providers frame the process of referrals to the parents, so that acceptance rate increases.
So, and just to add on to that, that what we did then was this parent information form, and we put all referrals that a parent might get from a provider, you know, to an outside specialist, to behavioral health, for the x-ray, for, you know, anything that they might be asked to get additional follow-up care for, we put that all on the same form. So it trying to address the stigma that this is another evaluation that your provider would like you to have, you know, please go do that. And then again, with the information about how you partner, that, you know, please do come back to your clinic if you haven't received an appointment for this evaluation within 2 weeks, is kind of the take-home message. And again, we've heard so many parents say, oh, well, they didn't call me, or, you know, they called me, but I didn't understand what who they were, and all these kinds of things. So we hope that really will be addressed with some better education.
And, you know, for ABCD, I mean, just building on that, and actually some work also that's happening in Massachusetts, is that normalization of screening and referral. So within public health, you know, and home visitation programs in Colorado, like Ayala said, we're doing a great job screening kids, but we know when you look at the 54% of pediatric practices that I had said that are screening, if you looked at just their referral rate, it's only in about the 70%. So again, it's that referring. So you'll see out of the ABCD project in Colorado, around that care coordination and linkages, a big piece is our focus in the next 2 years is around parent and provider education, as well as we're about ready to go to print on some publications just around that normalization. And we're giving parents some questions to ask their provider, so it's a tool that you can use to say, okay, we did this screening, and yes, you can ask your doctor, but then we'll be able to give them some materials, you know, with some prompting of questions. And Dr. Sices, Laura Sices in Boston, I don't know if you know her, but you can look up some of her work, has done a lot around that communication normalization of screening and referral. And, you know, again, when we're thinking screening, I'm thinking whole child. So it would be applicable to whatever, you know, whatever kind of screening that child is receiving at that point in time.
Good question. Great discussion. Thanks to everybody for all your work. With regard to access to care, I'm curious about, I know at Kaiser, for example, we have care coordinators and the well-child visits are free of cost. But at Denver Health, for example, are well-child visits free of cost? And further, for referrals, is frequently cost a factor? Is that a reason why families don't choose to see who they've been referred to, or is that ever a...
So from surveys, we know that families perceive that there's a cost factor, but early intervention or preschool services is a federally funded, it's an entitlement to families, so cost is not a factor, but we know within our communication, we need to communicate
See, that's
that
so
cost is not a factor.
I have a mother of two young children, and I didn't know that. I would assume that if anything my Kaiser physician referred me to outside of Kaiser,
would be a cost. Yeah, it's,
right.
I'm sure. Through public health, they hear that. It's something that's not communicated well, that this is...
Because then maybe more parents would be willing to take that initiative.
So that's again, in this education piece. We just did a parent training up in Eagle two nights ago and had a pretty large group of immigrant families attend that. And that was the first, you know, well, I would never do that because I can't afford it. We know
that factor into what
we did focus groups at Dove Health to find out, you know, what's keeping you from going to your early intervention visits, and that was a big thing, and that was something that we put in this referral information handout again. You know, this will be provided at no cost to you. So all of these little details that you guys are bringing is, they're all so crucial, you know, for parents to really get the services.
And are those services free of cost up to a certain age?
First, the three services, so early intervention services, it's a federally funded under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. If a child's over three, it's what we all know as special education. So again, that's at no cost to the family, but it's all school-based. So you move from very family-focused goals and outcomes to very education-focused goals and outcomes. But again, no cost.
And I would say, so our families, when we looked at the parent refusal, it was not about cost. And I think we've trained the providers that we can train to make sure that they communicate that it's true. But one of the things that is true is that even early intervention will charge Medicaid for the services. And so it's the families don't have to pay depending on their insurance, but it's not entirely true that it's all federally funded because, well,
that's
it is all federally funded.
Free. It's a no cost
to the family, but the service does get charged
somehow.
And then families will often have to use their insurance benefits to access additional services. So for example, physical therapy or speech language therapy, you would use your 20 sessions a year or whatever you're allotted. And so it's a little bit confusing for families, and then some families have to pay a copay to access those services. And I think the reality is that it's complicated and it's a family by family kind of an answer. And that we do try and communicate, at least for early intervention, that it's at no cost, that it's home-based services, and that it's going to be a team of people. You've got to collaboratively work on goals.
Well, just the fact that it's at no cost up until three, I mean, that's another reason for this watchful week not to maybe be happening as much, because the providers need to take advantage of the fact that this will help parents.
And one of the problematic things is that if that watchful wait happens at the two-year visit, and it's not really a watchful wait, it's a come back, we'll check you again. The again doesn't happen until three. And that is a huge point that we use with provider training, is you don't wait. And if you're gonna do a watchful wait, it's 2 months later that the child is coming in, and that's not a scheduled bell child check. So it's a very important point, and these nuances are something that in each of our systems we work really hard to communicate. You can't just do it with families, you have to do it with providers, and you have to do it with the recipients of the referral on the other end. So the person who answers the phone and says, or calls the family and says, your pediatrician said that your child has a problem. And that family never heard that language.
Yeah.
That family is going to think, no, they don't. And that's what we actually heard from our families when we called to say, well, did you get this phone call? Yeah, but they said that my child had a problem. And my child doesn't have any problems. And I talked to the doctor about it, and they're just a little bit worried that she's not talking yet. A little bit worried that she's not talking, and your child has a problem.
Two different things.
Well, we're getting to the end here, and I think we had one last question we have time for.
Whether you did this under the auspices of QI
No, this was all quality improvement, at least at Kaiser, and what you're talking about with our grass at Kaiser. Yes, that, it's all under the auspices of quality improvement.
But we did improvement. Go through an IRB to check that.
Mm-hmm. And we
and
continually
said
go back.
Research, yeah.
And how many, was there a fair number of refusals or opting out to do it in clinic?
Well, they don't, it's they choose whether, so the clinics put it in place and say, hey, we're offering this internet-based service to do well child developmental screenings, and we'd like you to do it online ahead of time. That's so, and the thing is at Kaiser, when you've seen one clinic, you've seen one clinic, as is evidenced by that graph. And so the one where the uptake was huge and quick, that's a clinic that's located in a place where parents are very internet savvy. They're the ones who come to the doctor and say, I looked this up, I need to check my child for this. So that's part of that, is the parents are choosing. The other two clinics, we're at about 10% are using the internet-based tool. The rest are still using the backup in the clinic. But the clinics are supposed to be doing the screening regardless, and so they've got their systems that say, we'd like you to do it this way, here's the tools to do it online. If they come in and they haven't done it online, they're given the backup.
We did do mailers to some of the clinics, the eligible parents of the kids eligible for well child mm-hmm. visits, so that was a fair amount of work and expense, as some of the team will tell you, but
right.
To alert them to this and give them information how they could register on chat. So we helped with that effort, and after that it was up to the providers in the clinic to alert the parents to it, to maybe talk it up, and there will never be 100% who do this. I mean, mm-hmm. it's the one of the lessons is you got to have flexible modes of gathering this information. Some parents like it online, some parents like the waiting room, some would do a kiosk, some would do a tablet. And operationally that provides nightmares for the office staff, because then there are different sort of ways of doing it, and they can't just say one size fits all, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, well, we are out of time. Thank you everybody very much for coming and talking with us.